can't keep getting away with it.
You were sitting on that one, yeah.
Yeah, I was sitting on that one. Big Gumball Talk. Matt Eichhorn, Jordan Flegel. For those who don't know, the Indiana Pacers taking game one
are
of
insane.
The NBA Finals. Yeah, what a awesome game. Crazy game. The prototypical Indiana Pacer playoff game this year. But this time they happen to do it against a 68-win Thunder team. Before we get into breaking down the entire game, talking about what we saw, what we liked, what we didn't, and then our predictions and outlook for the rest of the series as well as game two. Jordan, I got to say, because a lot of people were shitting on it, and I think we did last year, and I want to ask you, coming into this one, if we're talking pregame, ceremony, the looks and everything going on around the court and in the stadium. Did this feel like an NBA Finals game to you? Apart from the crowd. The crowd was great. The crowd was dialed in. They were loud. They were into it. But as far as the rest goes, I mean, I know a lot of people had some problems with the display here of the NBA Finals.
Yeah, and I get where they're coming from. I mean, I still believe it doesn't really feel like the finals, partly because of the two teams that are in it, even though, again, we just talked all last pod about Indiana. Their crazy run to even get here. It doesn't feel like either of these teams are like a heavyweight that you expected really to be in the finals. I know everyone kind of expected OKC to be there this year, but they're still a team on the come up still into this year. A lot of people didn't fully get on board with and believe in. But yeah, in terms of the production, I don't understand why they don't want to do the Larry O'Brien on the court. I've got my own qualms too about the crew that they've got calling this game. Mike Breen is great. I actually think Doris Burke is great. I don't see much value in Richard Jefferson, as a commentator. I think he's kind of funny as an analyst on a show, but I don't actually think he brings that much. And him and Doris, I don't think work that well together at all. That's the thing to me that makes it feel like, oh fuck. There's definitely better crews we could have on this game. Even with the game winner, they were silent. I was just rewatching it now to refresh my memory of the last few minutes of the game. It's just Mike Breen on that call, which is fine because he's a legend. But I feel like in the old days you would have had Mark Jackson being like, my goodness, or someone saying something. So
Jeff
yeah,
Van they're... Gundy complaining about a call from 1992 during the play.
Yes, exactly. Which is it would have been comforting, but. And, the production when they're panning to the crowd with, ESPN's fancy cameras at few moments, it's like, oh, yeah, this is the finals game. But I hear what people are saying. I don't really know I hear what people are saying that it doesn't really feel like it used to. That might just be life, though, man. I feel like every experience we're going through is like, wait, this used to feel different. We'll have to deal with that. I get the complaints. But hey, if you're talking about product, you couldn't get a much better game one, at least.
Yeah, agree. I like Richard Jefferson as a regular season commentator once in a while because he's kind of funny.
Yeah.
He tries to be comedic relief. Like he said, Halliburton was shooting tour dates at one point. He had to go back on it after he hit the game winner. But it's that's not really the guy that I want for the NBA Finals. Though, I mean, ironically enough, I always think it's funny because, people shit on Richard Jefferson. It's he actually legitimately has good enough knowledge of, what it means to get to the NBA Finals. He did it multiple times with the
played.
Nets. Was there, won the championship with the Cavs. This is a guy who genuinely is actually a kind of an underrated player in NBA history because he is kind of self-deprecating that way. Doris Burke, I don't really have a problem with her. It's weird because I feel like people have really gone fully a 180 on her this year, maybe even starting last year. Everybody loved her. Everyone thought it was cool. Drake was trying to fuck her. And now it's everybody hates her and thinks she's annoying. I don't know, nothing has really changed. I don't really know what people are.
Well, I think she's just got more responsibility. She didn't used to call these big games, obviously, and she was sort of I think she was doing the sidelines and stuff like that, and people were like, oh, Doris Burke legend. But then, of course, when she gets more responsibility, the people come out of the woodwork. I'm not like the, her biggest – I don't think she's the best commentator ever, but I think she's solid. I enjoy listening to her. I think it's just the chemistry of those three is not necessarily as good as I remember it being with Van Gundy and Jackson. But maybe that's just because when I was first getting – it was right when I was – they're like the voices of the finals to me, because it was, you know, back on the – from like 2010 when I would have first started paying attention. You know, through the next few, but I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, and then as far as the actual display of the game visually, maybe if Adam Silver could just stop trying to fucking milk the cash cow dry of the NBA, take like one fucking sponsorship off of the court, and then put thing just saying the finals in script. Or again, center court would be lovely with the Larry O'Brien underneath it. It really doesn't take that much. And we know they can do it because the stupid goddamn motherfucking in-season tournament gets completely custom courts with a giant fucking tournament trophy in the middle of the court. They can do it.
I don't know why.
Adam Silver, he likes to suck his own dick. That's why. If he came up with the NBA Finals, then he would have been fucking, he would be plastering it everywhere. Because he came with the in-season tournament, he wants to push the shit out of it so that way people think he's a good commissioner. Your shit, Adam. That pisses me off. Adam.
This is wrong though, Matt. This is wrong that we're starting with this, because this is all true but we're letting Adam Silver's NBA take away from what was an awesome game. So
true.
Shame on you, Adam, doubly, that we have to talk about this to kick off the podcast. But all valid. I'll say.
Well, we had to get some complaints in otherwise because, let's talk about it, Jordan. That was a hell of a game one. It's so nice to actually be able to sit down and just, like, really enjoy, a finals basketball game because, you compare it to last year, that Celtics and Mavericks finals was so bad, because it was just a blowout. It wasn't close. There wasn't really Luka was injured at the time. Like, it really just was. It didn't have that feel. Like, everybody knew the Celtics were about to wrap it up in a very short and timely manner. This one, I know a lot of people thought the Thunder were going to do it, but the Pacers just, as we said, kind of going into it in our preview podcast. And again, if you want to get our full predictions of how the series will go, I'm sure there'll be some repeats here, but be sure to go check that one out. But this was a clinical game of this Rick Carlisle Pacers team that just won't fucking stop. They are the guy, the mouthy guy who, no matter how many times you put them down, you can punch him, you can kick him, you can choke him out. The second that they can, they are getting back to their feet and they're going to keep swinging. They will not stop fighting until you actually kill them. And that's just how this team works. They are a never say die squad, and it showed in this one. 2 minutes left, I believe they were down like 11 points, and it was like, oh yeah, this is over. Nothing is the Thunder are wrapping this one up. Pacers put a good fight on the road, whatever. And then it just like kind of a bucket, and you're kind of thinking, okay, like I wasn't really looking at the score. And when Pascal Siakam had, like, I knew it was getting closer because Nembhard started going nuclear. He had an awesome game, especially down the stretch. They had that out of bounds call there on Siakam, where he kind of collides with, believe it was Cason Wallace, and kind of goes out of bounds. They don't call the foul; they just call the out of bounds, which I was a little surprised about.
Me too.
But this was a I kind of was like, oh well, that's probably the game. They're gonna have to play, kind of play the foul game or whatever. And then they let him go, and I'm like, oh shit, wait, it's a 1-point game. And as I realized it, Tyrese Haliburton is crossing up at the top of the key. The second that he went over onto that right side, I stood up. I was like, oh boy. He jacked it up. Oh, dude. And in my head, I'm like, I love it when this happens. It's definitely like a weird like brain thing where time kind of slows down. I stood up. I watched it. I felt like that ball was in the air for so long. And then, just nails it. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And again, I'm like, maybe there's like 2 seconds left or something. I look 0.3 on the clock. And I was like, whoa. Okay. This is just nuts. Tyrese Haliburton, the most clutch player in the NBA by far, not even close. I'm ready to fully put that tag on him. I mean, 4 crazy game winners in one playoff run is almost unheard of. They had the stat up there. I think it was since like 2000 or something crazy. It was like LeBron has like 8 go-ahead buckets or game-winning buckets
in
like the last 5 seconds. Reggie Miller had and 5, and now Tyrese has 5, but he's been in the fucking league since 2020. So it's
and
it's
4
just
of them came in 1 year.
Like
I know LeBron had a number of them in that 2018 run when you know he was just incredible. I think that stat was might have been even from like 97 or something. I know that I saw the stat that you're talking about that they were pushing. It's insane. I thought it was a straight buzzer beater as well. Like when it went in, same sort of thing. Time kind of stood still. It also kind of rattled in. And when he released it, I'm like, wow, he waited to the last minute here, or like literally the last second. And there was 0.3. That there was a little bit of intrigue there with 0.3. I'm like, they're only down one. They've got a timeout. They could maybe get a lob. Like they had the ability to do it. Obviously, it was just a tip away by Miles Turner there at the end. But it was just. We were talking about this in the group chat. Like, I actually can't believe this is happening. Like, very rarely do you like see an outcome in the NBA playoffs, which, you know, that's one of the biggest complaints that, you know, people who hate on the NBA have. It's like the best team always wins because it's a 7-game series. You can't even like pull off an upset, even if you, it's always predetermined. It's all this stuff. I've never seen this before. I don't think anyone's ever seen this before, just in terms of a team mounting these comebacks again and again and again. Like maybe similar things have happened, but again, it's been spread out and like different teams have maybe been doing it. Like even if this happened multiple times, just in general across the entire playoffs, we'd be like, wow, that's very like unheard of to have these such late game comebacks. The fact that it's the same team doing it, it's just like freaking Halliburton's going to get the credit for hitting the shot, but so many people had a hand in them coming back. Like Obi Toppin 100%. Had the game of his life right from the beginning when he looked a little rattled and then started hitting threes, hit 5 of them throughout the night, but a couple big ones in the fourth quarter. Same goes for freaking Miles Turner, who didn't hit anything for most of the game, but then hit some big ones. I think both of his came in the fourth quarter as well.
Yep, they did. Banked one in.
Banked one in, which just like... And then Nembhard, the one that Nembhard hit, I know he airballed a very similar one after this that Pascal Siakam picked up and put back in. But his like crossover a bunch of times on Shea, step back, high arcing three, like it's just it feels like people are making the joke online that one of these guys fucking sold their soul to the devil or something, because it's just I can't believe that they keep doing this. And then even like you said, the Pascal out of bounds play, I thought that would have been a turning point in my head. It's like, okay, if they get this challenge and it's Pacer ball, maybe they can win. But I don't see a scenario where if that's out of bounds off Pascal that they're going to pull this out, because the Thunder are so good defensively. You've got time. You've got great free throw shooters. How's it going to happen? The fact that they lost that challenge but still won the game, it's just it blows my mind. And it's also kind of insane that back-to-back series, the Thunder lost game one in a very similar fashion. It was the Aaron Gordon game winner that they let up at the last second in game one of that series as well. And the thing that I found so funny about it from the sort of overall game perspective, you could tell that the crowd, as Indiana was keeping it close at the end, were getting so nervous and way more nervous than they normally would, because this Pacers team's already done this. Yeah, well, but 100%. And like, I just think the crowd would have been like more like, oh, we've seen this a bunch of times where the inferior team in game one kind of keeps it close, but you know we're gonna get it done. We're gonna do this. If you're going up against the Pacers, I feel like that's out the window now. If you have a lead, even if you're up by 10. With a couple minutes left or something, which is traditionally, you know, where you're safe most of the time, I feel like you are sick to your stomach that the Pacers are just going to do it again. And the last thing I'll say for me is that like this one was unlike most of the other ones. The other ones have been either threes by Halliburton or getting to the rim. Like the one against Milwaukee was blowing by Giannis, getting to the rim for a layup. The crazy one against Cleveland, that was like a pull out step back three. Same thing against the Knicks last round.
Yep.
It's crazy to me that this was like a falling almost like stop on a dime mid range shot with a guy who has a weird release. Like he's not even, I don't even think he's really capable normally through a flow of any NBA game to pull up from the mid-range, because it's just not really what he's – it's not his strong suit. But the fact that he
if you looked at his shot chart, he probably never pulls up.
No. And so the fact that that's how he gets it too, like not only can he beat you from these other ways, but he can go against Cason Wallace, one of the best defenders in the NBA, with – like it wasn't even out of a timeout. This is just sort of how the play developed. He hits a long two. Like it's just I don't know what they're drinking over there in Indiana, or what they've got going on, what they've got in the locker room. But it's insane. And I feel like we're now catching up with all the buzzer beaters we should have got in March Madness, all the craziness that didn't really exist. It's just for whatever reason, the basketball gods have transferred it over. And now we've got a hell of a series. Indiana Skills game one. Jesus Christ, this is awesome.
Yeah, it definitely makes the rest of the series at least have a little bit more intensity, a little more spunk to it. Like I think that we're all probably looking a lot more forward to game two than we were game one now, knowing that this is a possibility. But again, the Thunder, to their credit, were up the whole game. They just, I don't know what it is that the teams get lulled to sleep a little bit. The Pacers just kick it to that next gear and they just can't get the bucket to go, because I know that the Thunder, they shot terribly. Like, I know I mentioned that, Richard Jefferson was making fun of, the shooting performance of Tyrese Halliburton. But the Thunder shot 40% from the floor. They dominated, the glass on the early goings. I know that in the end, the Pacers ended up leading, especially on the offensive rebounds. But for most of the game, the Thunder were really killing them on the boards up until that late fourth quarter. And it's just, I don't know what it is. Maybe it is almost a little bit in some of these teams' heads. Like, the Thunder have seen the Pacers. They've watched the game film. They know it's like, okay, shut. Like, this team does this. Like, I don't know if maybe that was something in the back of their minds that they were like, oh, my God, we are going to choke this to them. They are going to find a way to do this. It's a very, very weird feeling, I think, for a team to have, and not one that I think that many finals matchups have had in the air. And the other thing to talk about here with the Pacers, Tyrese hits that the game winner. He almost triple doubles, but he only scores 14. Nembhard has 14 on pretty inefficient shooting. Turner 15, Naismith 10, and Siakam was the leading scorer in the game with 19. This is just such spread out team basketball. Like, there really isn't a superstar. Like, obviously it is Halliburton and Siakam are the top dogs, but when it comes to overall production, it can be anyone. That's another thing that I like about this Pacers team is that They don't just heavily rely on their top dog. They don't just say, you need to get us 30 points or we're fucked. The Pacers have so many guys, so many weapons, and none of them are out there just, fiending for their own shot. They just play through the flow of the game, and they go for whatever is the best look pretty much every single possession. And that's why they're able to do these, crazy comebacks.
I'd like to know, honestly. I mean, maybe I'm overreacting a little bit and it's more common than I think, but I'd like to know the last time an NBA Finals team won without a 20-point scorer. If the leading scorer was Pascal with 19, it was so spread out, and it's not like this was a super low-scoring game, really. Like, both teams got to 110. That's pretty normal, especially for the finals. And that sort of, spread out production is really rare for finals teams. Normal, that's why it's the Indiana fucking Pacers are here in this position. This is a new kind of phenomenon. But you're right to point out the shooting. OKC can do a lot better, and at least on the 3-point side of things, 37% for them, and the Pacers shot the hell out of it, 46%. I think that's going to even out. But again, the Pacers are not a bad 3-point shooting team, and when you have all these guys who can do it, especially if you're getting the production from Obi Toppin off the bench. McConnell hit a three in this one at a very big moment as well. Ben Mathurin, he didn't hit one tonight, but he didn't even take one, but he's has the ability to hit them. Ben Shepherd can hit them. Thomas motherfucking Bryant hit one. Everyone on this team has the ability to hit them, and that is the one thing, the one potential weakness of this OKC defense. They pack the paint so much. They're so physical, but they will let teams shoot threes. That's been their thing all year, and they've just lived with it, and they've won anyway. And I think the Pacers, you might have to make an adjustment there against them, just because so many guys have the ability to do it. Even if one guy is cold, it's not like he's their only sharp shooter and it's like, oh, we've shut him down. Everyone can get in on the action. which again is why I think the Pacers are so fun to watch. And but the shooting thing, you know, on its own doesn't tell the whole story of like the whole team stats. The Pacers turned the ball over 24 times to 6 from OKC. Like, that's exactly what OKC wants to do. And you bet the Pacers, that's going to be the number one thing that they're going to want to clean up. So the fact that they couldn't capitalize on, OKC couldn't capitalize on such a huge disparity there is pretty crazy. The assists, too, are interesting. That 24 for Indiana, only 13 for OKC. Like, Shea had it going. He had a really, really great game. But I think, like, you know, maybe this will all be moot or whatever because OKC is just going to dial in, play incredible defense, and they'll be able to just roll like we all expected them to. But if this is going to be a closer series, like classic, you know, same thing we've been saying about the Thunder for so long, he's going to need someone else to step up and help, you know, alongside him in terms of the scoring. But he's going to have to also take it upon himself to get more guys involved in order to do that. Like, he can't only have 3 assists, I don't think. Like, I think that Thunder would have had a better chance to win if he had like 30 and 6 rather than 38 and 3, or, you know, something like that. Like, if he was looking a little bit to get someone else the hot hand, because again, Jalen Williams had a super inefficient game. Lou Dort was good, but he probably could have taken more shots, honestly. You know, in this one, he had a big sort of burst, I think, in the third quarter, but then didn't really do much. And then outside of that, you don't have even anyone else in double figures. Like, that's too much concentration of where the scoring is coming from. And SGA is good, and he's the MVP, rightfully. I think he's going to sort of figure that out and turn it around. But the other thing, too, is the physicality. OKC was supposed to have the physicality sort of edge going into this. 56 boards to 39 in favor of the Pacers. They were up there grabbing everything. Like, they had multiple guys in their starting lineup with 10 rebounds. Haliburton, Siakam had 10 too. Nesmith had fucking 12, and Turner had 9. The most for the Thunder was Chet with 6. And they switched that starting lineup. They start Cason Wallace over Hartenstein or Caruso. I forget who they normally start, but I think
it was Hartenstein.
They've gone double big, you know, for most of the playoffs. And I think that was, you know, it's interesting that that's how that played out, because I would have thought too that, yeah, single big against the Pacers makes more sense. They're so mobile, you know, they play sort of a smaller style and a faster style. So just having Chet out there in theory makes sense. But if he's going to get bullied physically, and for one, he also did not have a great showing in his first finals game, only 6 points in this one. He's got to be more aggressive and just more of a factor. But if he's not going to hold up physically, and you're going to have to go to Hartenstein more, or going to have to go to the double big lineup, then that opens things up for Indiana as well. So, fascinating sort of team stat layout in this one. I think both teams can sort of look at them and say they have things that they can improve. The Pacers, they just hit all the right buttons. But then the last thing I'll say too before I throw it back is that despite all that, OKC looked like they were in control. Like, that's how good of a team they are. Like, when they were up 15 or whatever halfway through the fourth quarter, it's like, okay, this might be the most competitive game of the series, honestly. You know, potentially Indiana comes in, adrenaline of the first game of the finals, but OKC is just going to put them away. They're just too dominant. I really don't know where game 2 is going to go. I would assume that OKC comes out and just blows the doors off of them, because they're going to feel like they need to, and Indiana might say, okay, look, we've got our split. Let's not exert ourselves too much. I think already after game 1, I don't want to overreact, but I'm ready to say that I think this series is going to be more interesting than people think. Again, I could be wrong. Maybe OKC, you know, just sort of goes to another level here. But, my pick of OKC and Thunder, OKC and 7, is looking at least a tad more realistic this morning.
Yeah, 100%. And I like that you called out the physicality of the game 1. You know, here, like, this was exactly like I 100%. I want to give some credit for once to the refs. This was the right officiating crew for this game. They let the boys play. That's what I like to see. Not every fucking call had to be on the floor. Like, there was a lot of pushing and shoving, but within the flow of the game, guys, you know, pushing and, you know, making reasonable contact to create space off the ball, stuff like that. Like, I love that shit. That was awesome. They even called a I believe they called it on Alex Caruso. It could have been Cason Wallace, but they called a lane violation on that Siakam free throw down the stretch, which in turn ended up being huge because he missed it, and then he hit the second one after they got to redo it. So that's a you know, not a lot of people talking about that one, but I fucking hate the lane violation. It's never called. You know, I don't really care too much about, you know, all the guys that go into the paint. Like, that's one thing. Yeah. But when fucking guys crash from the, you know, the 3-point line when it's supposed to be off the rim, that pisses me off. Who was it? Someone, I want to say it was someone on the Pacers. Was it Naismith that did it this year?
Naismith did it, I think, in the Pacers series, in a big part of their comeback, or in the, not the Pacers, the Cavs series. Yes. That was a clear, such a clear lane violation.
Yeah, unless he's like the fastest man on the planet and jumped from the fucking 3-point line. Yeah, that does bug me, but let's not get too much in a tangent there. But yeah, love the physicality on both sides of this for the game and the atmosphere as a whole. But yeah, we like the Thunder, like to talk about them and what they kind of did right, did wrong. Again, yeah, I mean, this is their game it was their game to lose, and they just didn't. I don't know if it was that down the stretch, like, they were trying, like they just couldn't buy a bucket. And like Shea had a great game, you know. Obviously, he was, you know, carrying the load once again offensively for this squad. And I mean, it's insane to say, like 38 points. He actually probably could have finished with like almost 50. There was quite a few, you know, open threes that he missed in this one. You know, shot 3 for 6. A couple of other shots that I thought, you know, he could have buried. And also for all those fuckers that think they're hilarious, the Shea's a free throw merchant, you know, memes. He only went to the line 8 times, and I'm pretty sure going into the fourth quarter, he had 4 free throws. So shut the hell up. But yeah, this was SGA doing his thing. He's the MVP, one of the, you know, top 5 players on the planet. And then he has, I'm going to say straight up, he had no fucking help from anybody in this game. This loss is pinned on everyone except for him. I know you called him out, you know, 3 assists and those numbers, it would be nice to see them, you know, a little bit higher. I didn't think he was, you know, excelling as a playmaker in this one, but at the same time, he can't even get assists because all of his fucking teammates, like they forget that they, have to put the ball into the basket. You know, Jalen Williams was dog shit in the first half. Like, he kind of salvaged his game a little bit there. In the fourth quarter, he had quite a few nice shots. One of the things I really had a gripe about, you know, down the stretch there, I believe it was the possession right before, you know, Haliburton goes down and hits that shot. Why was that Jalen Williams shot? Why was it not Shea getting that shot? Shea passes up, and then they wait the clock down, and then it's just a Jalen Williams drive to the rim, and he misses it. Like, yeah, no shit he's going to miss it. He's 6 for 19. Like, don't – or 6 for 18, I guess, before he missed that one. Like, he just – he doesn't do it for me on a consistent basis. Like, again, it was like – it's crazy because we kept saying, like, yeah, he was an all-star. Yeah, he was all-NBA. But because his team was so good, so it's like, well, obviously they have to have that second guy in there. Yes, but it's like, is he that good? Is he that good? Like, I've never fully bought into the Jalen Williams hype. Like, I think that, you know, he has the stats. He is a big part of this team. But at times, it's just like you really can tell he's a third-year guy. And I think that is kind of the weird part, is that with this Pacers team, like, both neither of these teams have, like, really any finals experience. Like, it's Siakam on the Pacers and Caruso on the Thunder. That's all you've got. And I don't know. It's just – I don't feel like you could make the excuse of, you know, immaturity or, you know, inexperience, because it's across the board. And guys on the Pacers, you know, they found ways to be productive, and, you know, he just didn't. But, you know, he still had a, you know, 6 assists. He had 4 rebounds. He played decent defense. Like, he had some, you know, good moments, especially, like I said, down the stretch. The guy who I really want to call out in this one, I mean, you said it, Chet Holmgren. Is like, he has been like bad almost the entirety of the playoffs. Like, I don't really, his stock just keeps getting lower and lower and lower for me, man. Like, he tries to do this like coast to coast shit where he gets the board, but he's too slow and way too fucking skinny. Once he gets to the paint, like, guys, like Miles Turner literally just stood there with his hands up, didn't even have to make a move on him, and then Chet bounces off him like he ran into a fucking brick wall, or like I ran into a newsie. Like, this is a like, that's how it looks every possession. That's how Chet Holmgren runs into guys. And it's just, and then he throws his hands up. Oh, come on. And it's like, buddy, maybe if you weren't fucking 7'1", 175 pounds, this insect. Wouldn't be a fucking issue, man. And then you can, like, the thing is, and then when you're not really that great of a dominant inside presence, like, defensively, yeah, he's still pretty solid, but even then, I don't think he was, you know, commanding the paint by any means. You know, in this one, he shoots 1-3. Like, I feel that's one of his biggest strengths and one of his, like, you know, the things that sets him apart is that he is a 7-footer. He's mobile and can shoot the ball. And then in this one, it's like, no, I'm just going to be Alex Pukaszewski, you know, throwback performance. Like, actually, you know what? Pookie would have shot the three. So what am I saying? But this Poku, is a Pookie. Yeah, Pookie Poku. Pokemon. That this is a weird, like, just game for him. And then, yeah, like, it's just I if he doesn't have a crazy bounce back in game two, man, I might be ready to just full on just be out on Chet, because I haven't seen enough development from him in his career. Like, I know that this is only really his second season, but it's just I don't get it. I don't understand his mental preparation coming into these games where this is kind of the play that he delivers. And I mean, again, I think that Dagno kind of sees that too. He only plays fucking 23 minutes. A guy who's supposed to be, you know, arguably your second best player, third best player. Like, you know, you're having to glue him to the bench. Alex Caruso is getting more minutes than him. That's a bit of an issue.
Well, yeah, I think that is the problem with this team is that you can say to Dagno, like, look, in this game, Hartenstein flat out was better than Chet. Why didn't you play him more? And I think that that's true in the context of this game when, you know, the Thunder obviously were 1 point away from winning it. They had it in hand. Like, if you flip the minute distribution, Hartenstein and Chet, I think maybe you get this done, because Hartenstein looked so ready to be there. You know, 9-9. He only played 17 minutes.
But came with the game like a bat out of hell, man.
Yeah, just like and he, I would have expected that from him. Like, he's one of the best, flat out, like, just one of the better centers in the NBA. You don't have to have to say, like, off the bench or give any of those distinctions. Like, he looked so ready to sort of match the physicality. You know, he actually got some boards himself, unlike everyone else on this team. But you need, if you're talking about, SGA needs more help, you have to take the risk and have Chet out there, because he's your sort of 2B scorer. And when Jalen Williams is going to be inconsistent like this, and Chet's going to have a bad game, you put that together enough times and the Thunder are vulnerable no matter how good SGA plays and no matter how great the rest of these guys, who are mostly, like, defensive specialists, play on a given night. Like, Caruso and Cason Wallace, I think, for the most part, and Lu Dort, had great, like, classic, typical games from them where defensively they're just all over the place. Dort had a huge block there towards the end of the game. I think on Siakam or someone who was driving that kind of looked like a foul, but you know,
I want to say it might have been Mathurin. Or maybe it was it was a sick block regardless of whoever it was.
Yeah, so, you know, that's their job. That's their job. But Jalen Williams and Chet, I know they're young players. I know they're still in their early 20s. Your job is to fucking score. Like, that is your job. That is the more important thing that you do. Like, Jalen Williams, I can praise him for his defense and sort of the other things he does in a game. I will continue to do that. But it's way more important that you just put up points efficiently. That's what we need from you. We need you to be aggressive, hit shots, get to the rim, and just be a little bit more smart about how you get offense. And, you know, get also, you know, get to the line yourself. He got there four times and he hit all of them, to his credit, but he's got to be even more aggressive in that sense, that, like, in the series where he's been a little bit more inconsistent, like that in that Denver one, he had games where he didn't get to the line at all. And so you put that together with Chet being just flat out overwhelming in almost every aspect. I agree. SGA just didn't have enough help. And that's going to have to change.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I want to call out before we kind of start looking towards, you know, game two a little bit here. I know it was just getting some guys some rest towards the end of the first half. And, you know, just doing it for the sake of doing it, kind of. AJ Mitchell was the horniest basketball player I've ever seen. Yes, yes. That 4 minutes, He did not stop sprinting up and down the court, jacked up three shots. Like, it was like if, you know, they just, like, told a fan you can get in there for a couple plays. Just, like, and they were like, fuck it, I got to make the most of this moment. I might never see this again. He went in there.
And he probably shooting, shouldn't.
He was shooting threes. He was driving to the rim. He was, he tried to fucking, he was playing super overly, like, aggressive defense on Haliburton, who just pump faked once. He fucking flew by. Dude, I was dying laughing. I was like, why is this guy in right now? I don't get it. I was like, I actually had to do double take. I'm like, who the fuck is that? And like he had a nice pass that didn't, you know, I can't remember who it was. He dimed it to that didn't end up finishing. I think it was Hartenstein. But yeah, it was just like, what are you doing, man? We don't need to see this guy back on the court. Like, unless like maybe you want to give him like a fucking like a Xanax beforehand or something. But I was dying laughing at this fucking guy just coming in and just going nuts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's. I really didn't expect to see him out there in game one of the finals. It's funny that he had minutes. Let me just double check what his plus minus was. -3, poor guy. That's another, just the last thing too, I would say I want to touch on is that I don't think these rotations are going to stay this long. I think both of these coaches are going to make adjustments. I mean, I know it's the beginning of the final series, but it is not unusual to have, you know, the majority of finals games played and decided with basically a 7-man rotation. And I know that's sort of the bulk of the minutes here, but I think you're going to see very soon guys just, you know, like you're in war, they're just going to die. And it's like, oh yeah, that guy died in game two. He got blown up. We're never going to see him again. So, you know, that'll be an interesting thing too. But, you know, you mentioned it to me right early on over text of this game. Like, there's some real coaching shit going on between these two sidelines. There's a lot of
game between
X's and O's adjustments. So that's been fun as well.
Yeah, no, I kind of actually forgot about that. That's a good point, Jordan. Thank you. I am a good observer of the game. It's awesome to see two coaches that actually understand the game, have ideas that, you know, can maybe find an advantage. Like, again, you said it, you know, even the Thunder, you know, decided to bench Hartenstein, start Wallace just to match up with the kind of speed and pace of the Pacers. Like, that is a cool coaching decision that I don't think we would have seen from pretty much any team in any finals matchup from the last like 10 years. Like, Steve Kerr never really did any of that. Nick Nurse was good at, you know, game plan changes, you know, in games when they, you know, the Raptors were on their run, but it wasn't necessarily a, you know, crazy, you know, pregame changer or anything like that. We're going to look forward to a crazy, crazy series here in the NBA. You know, game two, everybody knows, you know, we'll see if the Pacers can, you know, turn up the heat and keep, you know, put, you know, say like Kawhi Leonard, fuck it, let's just go get them both on the road.
Yeah,
the Thunder,
why not?
Bounce
Pacers
back.
Pacers have done it before.
It's going to be a crazy one. But be sure to stay on the lookout for Big God Ball Talk Finals Game 2 recap coming this weekend. Don't miss out on that one. Give us a follow at Big God Ball Talk X, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, roll the heads up there. And we'll be back talking NBA Finals very soon with you guys. Shout out to the Dog Pound staying with us one more time.
One last time.
This has been Big God Ball Talk. Matt Eichhorn, Jordan Flegel. That's my accent coming up. As my good friend Jordan
East Coast
always says.
I'll get more creative with these eventually, but it's early. It's
all right. It's 4 years.
I'll go with Let's Go Oilers again. We've got game two. Put the chokehold on these boys. Leon Draisaitl. Good day for to be German, Matt. That's how I feel. What a fucking snipe from that guy.
Yep,
great.
Yep.
All playoffs, but shout out the Germans. Good in every way.
Call the Oilers Luka Magnotta, man, because he's about to fuck with these cats.